great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, according to a study funded by the National Institutes of Health, almost one quarter of women have pelvic floor disorders. And you know what? Many men have that condition as well. And we'll be talking about it today, pelvic floor problems with our guests. We'll probably talk about some other ache and pain kinds of issues as well as we visit with Lori Tyne Brody. Lori, good to see you again.
It's good to be here.
Lori is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Carrie Schwerer with us as well. Carrie, hi. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
She manages the UW Health Spine Orthopedics team, and she directs the UW Meritor Orthopedic Residency Program. She's an orthopedic certified specialist. She has a special interest in treating individuals who experience pelvic floor dysfunction. So as we move along today, I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Sometimes it's not the easiest thing to talk about, but guess what? You can use a different name, and if you don't want to give
right.
your own name,
and
call in and ask your questions or give us your experience and, you know, maybe how you dealt with it successfully or maybe how you'd like to get it taken care of. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Carrie Schwerer, that is not the kind of problem people want to have, is it?
It's not, and there's a fair amount of stigma in the popular culture that's involved with it. But I think women and men need to know that it really is quite common. You cited that a quarter of women have this dysfunction. Really, we think it's probably a lot higher of an incidence because people don't want to talk about it. And a lot of these issues can come on after childbirth, and physicians and other providers will say, that's normal. You know, it's going to go away at some point. And a lot of times it doesn't.
It doesn't go away. Yeah.
It doesn't.
So what are the pelvic muscles, what's going on there? What do they do, and what aren't they doing when that disorder happens?
So pelvic floor muscles are like all the other skeletal muscles in your body that you can move. So if you think about your biceps and lifting up a bag of groceries, that muscle shortens as you bring your fist towards your shoulder. Mm-hmm. In your pelvic floor, when your pelvic floor muscles contract, they shorten up and they actually act like stepping on a hose, and they keep urine and fecal matter from passing through the pelvic floor out of the body. On the converse side, they need to be able to relax to be able to let that through at the appropriate time.
So the problem comes when?
The problem comes when the muscles are either weak, in which case they may not have enough strength to stem those fluids from being able to exit the body, or it can be overactive and it can manifest in inability to actually get urine or feces to go, so constipation, because it can't relax enough. And that can be a painful situation as well. The other scenario would be incoordination. Someone's trying to relax at the same time that other muscles are contracting, and it doesn't quite know what to do. So that can create issues and pain as well.
And women, why women? Why do women have the issue more than men?
Well, anatomically, women have three passages through their pelvic floor: the urethra for urine, the vagina for delivering babies, and the rectum for eliminating feces, whereas men only have two of those holes. So if you think about different sieves you might have in your kitchen, you have the wider ones that are going to let most things through, and then you have the narrow ones if you're trying to just sift, say, powdered sugar and get that light dusting. So men have that finer sieve mm-hmm. going on, and women yeah. have the bigger sieve.
Okay, and sounds like it's a problem that happens as we age a bit.
In part, that's true, because as we get older, our tissues aren't as flexible, and that muscle has to be able to contract and relax. But as it gets stiff, it may not be able to do that as quickly or as efficiently as it could. So like other muscles in the body, you have fast twitch muscles, which are your sprinter muscles. So if I need to cough and I feel that coming on, I might turn those muscles on really quickly to hold back urine. Then you have the slow twitch muscles, which are more your marathon muscles. Those are the postural ones that really help things to go longer.
Yeah, and part of the issue as you age is, you know, you have more life experiences. You've maybe had more children. Maybe you stop exercising and you're not keeping those muscles as well toned as you should. One of the things that I find distressing is society's answer to this has been diapers. adult diapers. And the ads I've seen show younger and younger women, promoting diapers to these young women as the treatment for this. And, it, as Carrie said, it's a skeletal muscle and it can be trained just as your biceps can or your quadriceps can. As long as people understand that physical therapists do this, we have people who specialize in pelvic floor treatment. So, you know, there's some people who specialize in treating golfers and some who specialize in treating pitchers. We have people who specialize in treating pelvic floor dysfunction because it is so common and it is so treatable.
Yeah. Well, Orville in Madison has a question I think relates to this. Let's go there. Hi, Orville. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Good morning. I have three questions. What is the pelvic floor muscle? What is perineum? And what is the muscle that women have in the pelvic floor that men do not have?
All right. Thanks for that question, Orville. So I'll take them in order, I believe. So the pelvic floor muscles are a sling of several muscles that actually go from the pubic bone, which is the hard part in the very front of your pelvis, back to your tailbone, and from one sit bone to the other sit bone. So if you can imagine, that's a bowl of muscles. It's made up of several muscles that have pretty complicated names. I'll throw them out there. They're puborectalis, pubococcygeus, and ischiococcygeus, and they form a bowl. So the bottom is kind of flat, and then it comes up the sides of your pelvis. Women and men actually have all of those muscles together. There's a more superficial layer that is at the perineum. So the perineum is the area that is immediately surrounding the urethra. And the muscles are slightly different, women versus men, because one of the muscles in women is more of a supportive function, but in men it actually supports erection during arousal. So that would be the main difference between women and men with that one. And then the third question was, can you remind me?
Oh, we lost him.
Okay. I hope I answered your question for you, Orville.
I think it was the second one was what the perineum was, and then the third was the differences between men and women. So I think you got them.
Yeah, I think you got them all.
I
think you got them all. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@WPR.org. We're talking about physical therapy issues today, taking a look at pelvic floor strengthening, among other things. And certainly if you have other issues, we can talk about those as well as we move along today. So the treatment options, it's not necessarily the case that everybody has to, as you get older, you're just going to have that problem.
No, absolutely not. Lori mentioned all the reasons why we get older, things can happen, but as with any other physical therapy, we have exercises we can do. Really, the entire pelvic floor gets its nerve contribution from the ribcage area and the low back. So sometimes there's things not working optimally there that need to be addressed as well. And we can go in and mobilize those things or get the nerves moving better and teach people different body mechanics. Sometimes the pelvic floor isn't working because it's doing too much work because the abdominal muscles aren't doing what they're supposed to, or people have stopped breathing as completely. And those things can be addressed as well. So it's not always just strictly that pelvic floor we're looking at, but how it's interacting with the rest of the neighborhood.
Gotcha.
And sometimes people come in with a primary complaint of back pain or low back pain, but it's really associated with the pelvic floor as well. So sometimes we get at it that way, where someone will come in and as part of our assessment of their low back, we'll discover that they've been having some issues with incontinence. Maybe they've changed their workout. Maybe they used to run, but they don't run anymore. Now they do an elliptical, or maybe they did an impact aerobics class, and now they do yoga instead because with that bouncing, they can no longer control that.
Gotcha. Jane in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jane. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering about the impact of perineal tearing during childbirth on pelvic floor. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and with my first, I had third-degree tearing, and then my second, I had second-degree tearing. And I've never thought I would need to, see a pelvic floor PT. I have a lot of girlfriends that have, because I've never had incontinence issues. But I do have severe low back pain, and some constipation issues, but now have with what listening has had me wondering if that's like maybe a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling, Jane. I certainly think a pelvic floor evaluation could be very appropriate for you. The thing about the tearing during childbirth is oftentimes that tear goes back toward the rectal area, and you can develop scar tissue along that line that needs to be loosened up and worked because it can lead to those constipation issues you were talking about. And when there is tearing, that levator ani muscle, which is the pelvic floor muscle's name as well, it can get to the point where it can't contract and relax around that scar tissue quite as well. And I am so delighted to hear you're not having issues right now. And there are other mechanisms that help with incontinence. So I'm glad that those are working for you. But the fact that you're telling me you're having a lot of low back pain and constipative issues, that tells me that that whole system is maybe not working so well, and some of the nerves may need to move more, some scar tissue might need to be addressed, and we would really want to know what's happening with those lowest parts of your low back. Are those joints moving, or are they inhibited because of poor mobility?
Yeah, so what do you do? What does Jane do in terms of, does she call her regular physician, or what does she do?
Well, Jane, because you're living in Madison, you have a lot of options. Madison is a hotbed of pelvic floor therapists. UW has about three of them. I think Meritor has another, or excuse me, UW has about 10 of them. Meritor has probably another 8 to 10, and there are other private practices, including Capital Physical Therapy, that have really strong presence. So you would call them up. Most of us require a referral for pelvic floor physical therapy, which is a little bit different from the direct access that Lori may have spoken about on prior shows, but you would call them to set up an appointment, and then when you come in, your therapist would sit down and talk about everything with you, including whether they feel like you need an internal examination or not. And then you would come up with a game plan together. But I anticipate, based on what you told me, they'd be looking at, is there scar tissue there? How well is your lumbar spine moving? How are your hips moving? Because that's in the neighborhood as well. And they would find out kind of what your timeline is to be able to get exercise in and what would be the best action to take in your particular case.
Lori, you're going to add something,
yeah, and,
too.
You know, Jane is not having symptoms now, which is fantastic. But she may find that over time, as she ages, that things that were not symptomatic now begin to be symptomatic down the road. So I think it's always wise to address these things early on to prevent sort of a cumulative effect of, you know, progressive lumbar spine issues, progressive hip issues, and now you have just a whole milieu of mess that it's really hard to untangle.
Jane, does that help?
That is fantastic advice. I'm going to go call my doctor.
All right. Good for you. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's hear from Janice in Racine. Hi, Janice.
Yes, hi. So I'm a 54-year-old woman. I'm having a constant, well, it's off and on, a pressure feeling in my rectum. I have had a colonoscopy, which came back negative, and a ultrasound of my ultrasound with contrast of my abdominal area, which also came back negative. And I'm wondering if this is a pelvic floor issue, and if you have any advice.
Well, all of the medical things have been ruled out, so it certainly could be a pelvic floor issue. It is possible for the pelvic floor, when we try and defecate, to actually contract, which is counterintuitive. It's like trying to walk through a closed door. It doesn't work so well. There are a couple of things that can help you get in the appropriate position. So sometimes just getting those knees higher than the hips by having a stool in the bathroom, that can be very helpful. There's a product out on the market called the Squatty Potty that a lot of people use with their toddlers, but are equally effective with, they're equally effective with adults. But it gets your knees a little bit higher because the angle of the rectum is actually such that it's designed to keep things in. So if you're on the shorter side and your toilet is high, you're trying to exit things around the bend, so to speak. So if you can get your knees higher, now you've got a straight shot to go out. Other things that you can do is if you have a time of day that you typically have to go to the bathroom, You can try drinking warm fluids before and doing some light exercise like walking, going up and down stairs, and that sometimes primes the system. Additionally, when we eat about 20 minutes after, if we've eaten enough of a meal, it stretches the gut, which gets a reflex going, which tells the body, okay, it's time to eliminate things. So if you can time those things to work out well, that can be a really powerful sort of thing as a first line defense.
Janice, I hope that helps.
Well, it's not so much problems around going to the bathroom. It's more problems when I'm sitting. It's less, when I'm sitting, I feel the pressure a lot more. Although when I am standing, it goes away somewhat, but it's often there just a little bit. Some days I don't have it at all, but often I have it, off and on for a good part of the day. This has been going on since about February.
Janice, does it come on with more heavy activity, or is it fairly random?
It's random.
Okay. Because pelvic organ prolapse is another thing that can cause that pressure and that difficulty with voiding, and that's when there becomes some laxity in the different organs in there. So the rectum sits behind the uterus, which sits behind the bladder. So sometimes if the connective tissues in between those get lax, the uterus can actually kind of sink into where the bladder is, and that makes the area more narrow to evacuate things from. And that's where some of that positioning can come in. If you're already going, or if it's trying to go around the corner, and I know you said you're not having as much trouble with defecating, but if there's any sort of straining going on then, it can cause that to be a little worse. Also, lifting mechanics and things like that can put increased pressure on that. So that would be something that a pelvic floor physical therapist could look at more specifically. It's hard for me over the radio to get at the nuances of that, but pelvic organ prolapse is the other thing that comes to mind there.
There you go. Good luck, Janice. Thanks so much. And so Janice should probably be getting a referral.
Yeah, getting someone to take a look at it, because it seems like it's one piece of the puzzle that hasn't been addressed yet.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck, Janice. Thank you so much for calling. Lori Tyne-Brody and Carrie Schwer, our guests today. Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Carrie manages the UW Health Spine Orthopedics team, directs the UW Meritor Orthopedic Residency. I'm Larry Mueller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for being with us today as we take a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues. Actually, you can join in with something that's bothering you. We've zeroed in a bit on pelvic floor strengthening and some of the issues surrounding it with our two guests, Carrie Schwer and Lori Tyne-Brody. Great to have them here. And again, join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Carol in New Richmond next. Hi, Carol. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. My question is for Carrie, for either one of the speakers. I have been to a physical therapist in regards to pelvic floor issues, and I've also seen GYN for that. I'm just wondering, thinking about, like she talks about resetting when I go in and like working, because they've actually isolated and said that there's one side that I don't, when I do a Kegel, that doesn't work. So my question is would inversion therapy work to like work on some of those muscles if I was taking some of the pressure off, then would I be able to work on retraining some of those muscles?
Thank you for that question, Carol. And my answer to that is yes. So in any type of physical therapy, when we have a muscle that's really challenged to work against gravity, we put it in a position where there's less gravity working on it or no gravity. So it's not uncommon for me to have my patients who have really weak pelvic floor muscles, be it one side or both sides, getting them lying on their back with pillows underneath their hips so that gravity is pulling, is helping the pelvic floor pull things downhill. So inversion therapy in that regard can be very helpful. I just want to make sure that I'm addressing the type of inversion therapy you're thinking of.
Yeah,
I'm not actually thinking of anything, to be honest with you. In particular, I just thought, you know, I have a daughter who's a chiropractor, and I kind of ran it past her because I said, you know, I just wonder, not maybe to the extreme that she might use in her practice, but maybe kind of a in-between area, like you said, maybe a wedge or something where you're just kind of taking the pressure off. So that I actually feel like I'm actually working on those muscles rather than constantly putting pressure on those muscles.
No, absolutely. And we often will start people in that inverted position, and then we'll get them in sitting where there's support from the surface they're on to start working those muscles, and then into standing, and then getting them into more functional things like having the legs staggered like they were going to go upstairs or something of that nature, because we don't really actually stand still all that often in life. When we're walking, that pelvic floor is on diagonals getting stretched in each direction. So your questions about where to start are very insightful.
Mm-hmm. And thanks so much for calling. You know, Kegel exercises came up. Lori, Jane from Douglas County wondered if you could explain, or either of you could explain Kegel exercises, what they do and how to do them.
Okay, so Dr. Kegel was the one who was the originator and gave the name to pelvic floor muscles. So it's really that taking the pubic bone in the front and the tailbone in the back and making the distance between those two shorter. But we know from some of the literature done by Drs. Laycock and Delancey that most women do not do this correctly. They substitute their buttock muscles, they substitute their inner thigh muscles, and that's where having a professional who knows what should be happening can be very, very impactful. I have women who come in, and men who I've treated, who've said, yes, my OBGYN gave me Kegels. I've been doing them for years and I'm still incontinent. And then when I do my exam, they're actually clenching their butt or bearing down and holding their breath and really pushing with their abdominals. So even though it sounds like that wouldn't be so hard, pulling the front and the back together, it can be a little bit challenging.
Let's take another call. Gail in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Gail.
Hello, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
I'm 80 years old, and about a year ago I had surgery for hysterectomy, urethra sling, and a bladder lift, and it resulted in some problems that I had afterwards, including a piriformis nerve issue. And I did go to physical therapy with a specialist, and I found it helpful, but it didn't get rid of all of the issues. What I did find was very helpful in addition to that was it's called BOM, Mind Over Matter Group. It's at the senior center, and it's at senior centers in other areas in the state, but they had it at Grafton. It was about 2 hours, three times, maybe 2 weeks interspersed between the sessions. And it focused on bladder and bowel issues, and women were able to talk with one another about the issues that they had, and I found it extremely helpful, and I've gone from like a four, however they measure, four-degree pad to a one-degree pad, which I don't need as often. I've learned how to eat differently, how just a whole lot of different things that have been very helpful, and I just really want to put a plug in for that group.
Sounds like
a
good.
I'm not sure if you've heard about it before.
Gail, thanks for calling. Sounds like a great group.
Gail, I'm so glad that there are resources out there at our senior centers because, as you mentioned, there are so many things that go into this, and I think you've hit on some of those things that maybe weren't addressed in your one-on-one therapy, but I'm glad you got the help, and thank you for putting out that public service to the rest of the listeners.
And I think it really is important, particularly, well, with this kind of problem and a number of different problems, to have that environment where you can talk with other people and get answers to your questions, and as you said, with that one-on-one visit. Sometimes you forget to ask the questions, you don't think of it till you get home, or you think you understand it while you're in that session with that person, but then you get home and you go, now what was that? I don't
yeah.
quite remember how to do that. So it's good to have that resource and to have that support group so that you don't feel like you're the only one out there with this problem.
And thanks again for calling. So that's the MOM group, M-O-M, MOM. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call, and we'll take some other physical therapy issues as well as we move along today, so don't feel bad if you don't have a pelvic floor issue. If you've got some other issue, we can deal with those too.
We still deal with backs and knees and shoulders and the whole gambit.
Karen in Madison emailed her OBGYN friend, labeled her issue as front door syndrome. Can you address the urgency to urinate upon arrival home? What when that is the only issue and it's sort of a reflex? Do exercises help there?
Yes, they absolutely can. So front door syndrome is also accompanied by running water syndrome. So, Karen, what you're experiencing is you get home and the first thing you want to do is go to the bathroom. There's people who hear running water and they're doing the same thing as you. But there is a reflex between your brain, your bladder, and the pelvic floor that you can actually circumvent. If you can do a few of those Kegel exercises in short bursts and take a couple deep breaths and not be anxious about getting to the bathroom, you can actually take what I call a 5-alarm fire as that urgency and make it a 2 or 3-alarm fire. So that would be the recommendation. And when people come into my clinic, we say, okay, we have to really analyze, when was the last time you went to the bathroom? Because going to the bathroom, normal is every 2 to 3 hours. So if you really have not gone to the bathroom for 4 to 6 hours and you get that front door syndrome signal, there may not be a whole lot we can do about it. But if we can make that time less in between, then we can. Because if your bladder is truly full and you get that urgency, that reflex may, trying to cut that reflex short may not happen.
And Karen in Appleton will go to you next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I had a question about, I did have a complete pelvic prolapse surgery about 15 years ago, and they also did like bladder sling surgery at the same time for incontinence. And within 10 years, like you can't even tell I've had the surgery. Is that pretty normal? And I don't know whether I should go back and like try to have the surgery redone, if that's the better alternative than trying physical therapy. But my most important question is that when you said about the how they push adult disposable diapers and things like that, and I've had a lot of problems with those, as I know other people have. Are you familiar with, or any of the callers, reusable underwear for incontinence? What's the best brands?
All right. Thank you for those questions, Karen. So first of all, the surgery, I would say the results are variable. I have seen patients for other things that aren't pelvic floor that have had surgeries 20 plus years ago and are doing fine. And I've seen people who've had revisions done within 5 or 10 years. So I think a lot of it depends upon how the healing occurred in the post-operative period. So some of the things that might result in failure are if you have a need in your life that you have to do a lot of heavy lifting and maybe the tissues weren't quite healed enough to take on that stress. That's something that can help. Or you get bronchitis or a chronic cough. That puts a lot of pressure on it. So those are some things that can go against it. Some of it also is what were your symptoms before and what were they after? We have two types of incontinence. One is stress urinary incontinence, which is the when you cough, sneeze, get up from a chair, do anything which requires more effort, you lose a little urine. The other is the urgency incontinence we had just talked about briefly with the front door syndrome, and that's more of the bladder is overactive. If you have both of those things going on at the same time, the surgery will oftentimes take care of the stress urinary incontinence piece of things, but not necessarily the urge urinary incontinence piece of things, because that can have a lot of behavioral changes that need to go on with it, or we need the muscles to actually calm down instead of squeezing the bladder. Does that answer the first part of your question?
Yes, I didn't know the surgery only took care of one part of it because I did have both.
Okay. I'm sorry it didn't take care of both, but I'm hoping it took care of at least the stress portion of things and that continues to go on well. Then your second question was in regards to the adult disposable diapers and those not working so well for you. And certainly in my practice, I have plenty of patients who are like, I can't keep doing these. There's too much skin irritation. I haven't necessarily found a great disposable or a reusable one that works really well. There are some period panties that some of my patients have said will work fairly well. If you type in period panties into any search engine, it will give you a number of different brands, and I can't say that anybody has weighed in with one more than the other. The difference you have to know is that urine is more liquid than discharge during the period. So it's going to soak through, and potentially you may need to change that a little more often.
All right. There you go, Karen. Thank you so much. Let's take another call. Marie and Jefferson, your turn. Hi, Marie.
Hi. Did you get my message? Okay, I'll repeat it. I'm 81 years old, and I have a history of two knee replacements and a hip replacement on the left side. On a recent bone density test, it showed that I have lost more bone in my right thigh. The leg has had a knee replaced on there 4 years ago. I have, over the years, been able to keep osteopenia that rating rather than going to osteoporosis, so I must be doing something right, but it has shown a significant loss in my right thigh. And I'm wondering, is there something that I can do to increase the bone density in that leg? I ride my bike all the time, my exercise bike, and also walk often. And I'm careful with my calcium dosage and things like that. So is there a way to regain bone loss?
That's a great question, Marie. And at 81, probably not a way to regain lost bone, but the idea would be to try to stave off any further loss. So it sounds like you're doing good things with watching your calcium and your vitamin D. Since you've had a bone density test, I expect you're under the care of a physician who is managing any medication intervention for that. There's a number of medications that they suggest for people who have osteopenia. In terms of your exercise, I like the walking because it's weight bearing. The bicycling is great for your joints, for your hips and your knees. You've got a couple knee replacements and a hip replacement. It's really good for those joints and maintaining mobility and your cardiorespiratory fitness. But you don't have any impact. So the walking is impactful, but the issue is it's the same stress over and over. One of the things we know about building bone is you need to have what they call odd forces, and that is forces that are not the same day in and day out. So walking loads your bones in precisely the same way every step of the day. So you need different kinds of exercises. And typically we like to have people do weightlifting. Weightlifting pulls on your bones or adds stresses to your bones. If you're doing walking, we like to have you walk different directions. So not just forward, but backwards, sideways, and walking and then changing directions, because that stop and start also adds an odd force to it. Upper body weight training can help with bone density in your upper body, your wrists, which are another area that's susceptible to fractures, as well as your spine. So I would say getting in a more comprehensive program. Even some kind of, aerobics, but some other cardiorespiratory that has different forces to it. Stepping, changing directions, things like that, some sort of a dance move that gives you impact loading in different directions.
And if you're thinking about weightlifting, are there things, I mean, is there something Marie could use at home? I mean, does it have to be you're not lifting 100-pound weights here.
No, it doesn't have to be really heavy weights. And if I understand,
5 pounds
she's
or whatever.
Yeah, well, I understand she has some bone density or some joint issues. So one of the things is we would want to be careful that the weights don't flare up her joint. So like Carrie said earlier, in terms of progression, where you start you know, minimizing gravity, and then you move against gravity, and then you add resistance, we would want to find the right mix of exercises at the right intensity that doesn't flare something else. So, you know, seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits to establish that program, and Marie can decide if she wants to do it at home, if she wants to get some weights or something to do at home, or if she has a local fitness center that she might want to go to. A physical therapist can help design that program so it's safe for her joints.
That makes a lot of sense. Marie, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Charles in Kearney, it's your turn now. Hi, Charles.
Hi. I just had a question. I know control issues are pretty common with cross-country racers.
Mm-hmm.
In the case that they are, should they go to, would therapy be recommended to avoid problems when they're older?
Yes, therapy can be recommended in distance runners. So usually the issue that is occurring in athletes is more that their pelvic floors are overdeveloped because they have strength in the adjacent muscles, the hip rotators, the inner thigh, the glutes on the back. They oftentimes get more activity in there, and then the muscle is already shortened, and when it tries to shorten more, it can't necessarily do that if we're trying to hold back urine. So seeing a physical therapist to balance those things out could be a very good idea. If it's gone away, it may not come back depending upon what the gap has been, but certainly if there's something underlying, it's better to check it out earlier than later. And we see a fair amount of runners at UW with our sports program downstairs. We have a fairly steady stream of referrals upstairs to work on this as well.
So there you go, Charles. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Cynthia in St. Louis, Missouri emailed that she's been told for 10 years she had a minor pelvic prolapse. Then in January, she was moving ice boulders from her driveway and felt something fall, as she says. She had a pain and thought she might have it for life. She saw a physical therapist who specialized in pelvic floor prolapse. And after 3 months and 10 one-hour sessions plus 15 minutes a day in home exercises, she was better than she'd been in years. She says she'll keep doing those exercises throughout her life and is so grateful to her wonderful therapist.
Cynthia, I'm glad you had a wonderful experience, and thank you for sharing what all of the other listeners can experience as well.
Yeah, it's wonderful, wonderful experience there. Lori Tynebrody and Carrie Schwer, our guests today. Carrie manages the UW Health Spine Orthopedics team, directs the UW Meritor Orthopedic Residency, and Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at physical therapy issues. We've zeroed in a bit on pelvic floor strengthening and some of the problems associated with the pelvic floor with our two guests today, Lori Tynebrody and Carrie Schwer. Carrie manages the UW Health Spine Orthopedics team, directs the Meritor Orthopedic Residency. And Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. So there's one open line at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Lori and Carrie, there are other places in addition to UW Health or Meritor that can provide this kind of service throughout the state, are there not?
Absolutely. They're usually where you have a concentration of cities, you're going to find women's health therapists. So Milwaukee has a pretty strong presence through the Aurora groups and Ascension groups. I have a few colleagues there that I've collaborated with. Marshfield Clinic, I have folks I've collaborated with for sure. And there are certainly a number of them in Appleton as well. But if individuals are looking to see if there's someone near them, there is our professional organization's website, which is womenshealthapta.org. So WOMENS HEALTHAPTA www.radiusradio.org. You can put in your zip code and do a search for a radius around your zip code, and you can find folks who may be able to help you.
There are also certified specialists in women's health, are there not?
There are.
So how do you find those people?
Those people, you can go to the same website, and they should have a little icon that indicates that they're a specialist. It looks like a triangle, and it will say certified specialist on it.
So, and again, just run the address once by me again. Women's Health.
Women's Health, APTA.
APTA, that was the one. Okay.
That's our
professional organization, APTA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to Susan in Milwaukee next. Hi, Susan. How can we help?
Yes, I'd like to have you or your guest give some discussion on the problems of cystocele and rectocele.
Okay, thank you for calling in, Susan. Cystocele and rectocele are two different types of pelvic organ prolapse. So the beginning of the word just says which organ it is. So cysto is that the bladder is moving where it ought not be, and rectocele means the rectum isn't moving where it should be. In between each of those organs, so rectum, uterus, and bladder, there's connective tissue that typically acts like a strut to keep things in place. But as we age or if we've had any sort of trauma, that can actually break down a little bit, and then things can start encroaching on the other. So if you have ever walked by a tent on uneven ground and maybe lost your balance, you step to the side. You don't go into the tent, but you maybe make a little bulge for the folks that are in there. That's essentially what a cystocele or a rectocele are. And typically those are going into the vaginal canal. And that's where the symptoms are typically manifested as either pressure or feeling like something is falling out.
Susan, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Karen in Gurnee, it's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for a great show. I've been diagnosed with pelvic floor dysfunction and tension myalgia. I also had some prolapse, and so they put pelvic mesh in, quite a bit of it. And I have mesh eroding into my bladder. And it seems to be, to me, making the pelvic floor dysfunction worse. Do you guys have any experience about, like, that inflammation in that area, if that would make the pelvic floor dysfunction worse, and then, you know, if maybe getting that out or corrected might actually improve my pain and symptoms?
Karen, thanks for that question. I would strongly recommend you talk to the surgeon who did that surgery to talk about options there. It is possible if there's mesh that is eroding into an organ that that is going to create a signal of irritation, which can lead to that pelvic floor not functioning appropriately. Not having been the one to do the surgery, I don't know what your options may be. And certainly when they do their imaging, the erosion can be in different places. If it's just eroding and not going other places, it's typically not impactful. But if you really feel and have been told that it's eroding into your bladder, I would recommend that you talk to either the surgeon that did it or another urogynecologist who specializes in those procedures.
All right. There we go, Karen. Thank you again for calling. John in Milwaukee has a question. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Well, good afternoon, and thanks for accepting my call. I'm phoning from the St. John's on the Lake rehabilitation facility, and I'm currently undergoing rehabilitation for a hemi replacement of my right hip. And I just would like to convey that for anyone who has this type of injury and that requires a surgical replacement of the hip, how important it is to follow the advice and directions of a physical therapist, and just to grind it out and stay on task and do the best you can with your therapy and working through all the psychological and physical problems that one encounters in recuperating from such a trauma. And I thought your two guests might be interested in just hearing this comment from me.
John, thank you. Well, Lori?
Geez, John, that's really nice to hear. We're grateful when people appreciate the importance of the rehab after surgery. We don't see as many people after a hip replacement as we do after a knee replacement. A lot of hip replacements go pretty smoothly for people, and they don't run into too many problems. So we don't see quite as many of those folks as we do the knee replacements, which really takes a lot of strength and diligence. In fact, I just saw somebody last week who had one done and said, don't even talk to me about having the other one done. So, because it is a very long rehab. So a few things. If you can do some therapy beforehand, I think that's useful because your body gets used to doing the exercise. If you haven't been exercising because your hip or your knee's been painful and you're just waiting for the surgery, you're going to have a deeper hole to dig yourself out of post-surgery. So I have a number of people who come and exercise in the pool because it's more comfortable to exercise there before surgery. They can keep their swelling down. They can keep their mobility and their strength up. And so they're in a little better shape when they come out of their surgery on the other end. But John is right. It takes a lot of mental fortitude to work through the PT. And as we say, you know, pay me now or pay me later. We see what happens if you don't do the work right away. So it is really important to do that PT right from the start and keep going, and you'll be happy in the end.
Yeah. John, thanks so much for that comment. I really appreciate your call. I want to give Leah in Mount Ida a chance to join in. Leah, hello to you.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I was listening, and when you spoke a few minutes ago to the 80-something-year-old woman with the bone density issue, I just it made me think of how much benefit I have gotten from my mini rebounder with a stabilizing bar, and it's after I get really stiff and everything, if I'm sitting at my desk for too long, and if I just get on there and I even just gently walk or bounce lightly on it for, you know, the length of, I don't know, a song, Staying Alive or something.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Then I have much greater ease in my hips, and I feel like I have more energy in my legs, and it makes taking my dog for a walk a little more pleasurable. But it's also nice because you were talking about shifting your weight around, and with the stabilizing bar, it makes it easy to do that, you know, and it doesn't have to be anything fancy. Just, left, right, and then put your right foot forward and your left back, you know, and sort of change directions, a cross-patterning kind of movement, and I don't know. I just wondered if you thought something like that might be of benefit to her.
That's a really good question. If her joints can tolerate it, generally your joints are going to like this because the mini tramp itself is shock absorptive. So when you land on it, the trampoline itself has give to it. So it gives and it does some of the shock absorption, but it has sort of that weighting and unweighting kind of loading that your joints really like. So I'm not surprised that your joints really like that kind of activity. Not a lot of impact, a little bit of motion, a little bit of loading and unloading, it really likes it. I don't know if it's enough impact to help osteoporosis, but because it is a different kind of loading than she was doing previously, it's not going to hurt. And if, you know, generally I'm in favor of doing anything that gets people moving, you know, whatever it is. And that's why sometimes when people say, well, should I do exercise A or should I do exercise B or should I do exercise C for my general health? I say, you have to pick what you like. You have to pick something that's sustainable, something that's convenient for you, something that you enjoy, something that you will continue to do, because it doesn't matter if you think you should do this. If you do it for 2 weeks and then you say, well, this isn't for me, and then you stop doing it. So absolutely, it sounds like this works really well for you, and I would say absolutely keep it up.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. And walking the dog isn't a bad idea either.
That's a great idea, too.
I have to walk the dog? Well, that's all right. Good for you. Oh, man. A listener emailed to ask if there are any exercises useful for men with enlarged prostate, especially regarding slow stream?
That is a little bit more challenging of a question because the prostate itself, as it enlarges, serves to cut off that hose from the bladder to the outside. So exercises there may or may not be helpful. With that enlarging, the pelvic floor can get irritated and actually decide to go into that shortened position and therefore can't completely contract or relax. So if that's part of the symptoms, going through pelvic floor therapy could be helpful because it may help you to regain that full excursion of the muscle. So it can fully contract, fully relax, and then you're only dealing with one challenge versus two.
All right, there we go. Steve in Madison, hello.
Good morning. Yes, I'm 71 years old, and I have a problem which probably goes back to when I was a kid, but it never really was a problem until the last year or two. That is that when I was a kid, I think they diagnosed me as having curvature of the spine. Now, what happens is that when I walk, then I roll. Excuse me. I roll to the outside, and I know most people tend to roll to the inside. I roll to the outside.
You roll your foot out to the outside.
Or my knee to the...
Your knee, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then, so I've tried some lifts, and any lifts that I've tried bother my back. So it's almost, and I have fallen several times, so it's almost like a choice between falling down or having a sore back and hip. And I'm wondering, is there any exercise that I can do
that
could help this?
So I think we have a few more questions we need answered in order to answer that question for you.
We'll take a quick look at the news and weather. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back. And Steve, we may have a couple of questions for you coming back out of the news with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Carrie Schwer. I'm sorry. Getting that name right. We'll be back with Carrie and with Lori right after this look at the news. So stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Carrie Schwer, who manages the UW Health Spine Orthopedics team, directs the UW Meritor Orthopedic Residency. She's an orthopedic certified specialist and has special interest in treating people who have experienced pelvic floor dysfunction, and we've dealt a lot with that throughout the show, but we're taking other questions as well. All our lines are filled, and we had Steve from Madison on as we broke for news. And Lori, you want to summarize what Steve was talking about?
So Steve is a 71-year-old gentleman who had scoliosis as a kid, and he's having some issues where his foot rolls to the outside, and he tried wearing some lifts, but they cause problems with his back, and he wants to know if PT helps. So, Steve, I wondered if the foot rolling to the outside, is that both feet or just one?
Oh, it's pretty much one, I guess.
So, okay, and you put lifts in both shoes?
No.
Okay, so you put a lift just in the one.
Yeah.
And is it an orthotic, like an arch support or a heel lift?
It's a heel lift. It was one given to me by a podiatrist.
Okay.
But I've tried over-the-counter ones, too, and it seems like nothing seems to go with that.
Okay. So I do think physical therapy could help you. You know, what Carrie and I were talking about over the break was this issue of scoliosis, which can create a functional leg length difference, which may be helped with a lift, but it may be also that we need to look at your pelvis and see about doing some corrections there. We may need to see how much of a leg length difference there is, if some of it is static, if some of it's dynamic, and really see where to correct it. Because if you have a genuine leg length difference due to your scoliosis, a lift should help with your back pain, not worsen it. Typically, your foot is going to roll out on a short leg and will flatten on the long leg on the other side. So I think you really need someone to take a close look at you from stem to stern and sort out whether you really need a lift, and if so, in what shoe, and give you some things to help balance you out left to right side in terms of your scoliosis.
There you go. Good luck, Steve. Thank you very much for calling. Vicki in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. I have been diagnosed with spinal stenosis, and it all kind of started. My husband and I went on a bike tour in Prince Edward Island, and so we were riding bikes a lot last summer getting ready for this, and we rode on the island, and the actual riding went fine. But toward the, you know, at the very end, when I was walking, it felt like I could hardly lift my legs, and I had horrible pain in my back. Well, the diagnosis was made. I went to PT and did the exercises faithfully all winter, still rode the exercise bike quite a bit. And then now just this spring, and I was fine. I was pain-free. I didn't take anything, and so I thought, oh, this is great. Well, this spring I got my bike out, and we went on a very short ride, you know, like 8 miles, and I've started noticing it again. I mean, it's not terrible. I'm not taking anything, but it's not going away, even wow. with my exercises, and it's just kind of there. And I'm wondering, you know, should I be going back to PT? What do I avoid? Should I be taking a leave or something so it doesn't worsen or get irritated? I'm just, you know, should I not be lifting? Should I not be doing bumpy things? And why was the exercise bike okay? But I went on this bike ride and that seemed okay. to be the trigger.
So what kind of road bike do you have? Is it an upright? Is it a road bike?
It's a Trek. Yep, it's a Trek upright. It's a hybrid.
Okay, so are you upright? Or are you in a forward lean? Okay. And then the stationary bike is what kind of a bike?
It's a Schwinn Airdyne where my arms go back and forth.
All right. Okay. And last question. Your spinal stenosis, do you know if it's central canal or foraminal?
No.
Okay.
I don't.
All right. So my best guess.
I have an MRI. My doctor didn't really seem to think it was necessary.
Okay.
So I just did the physical therapy.
Okay. So they made the diagnosis of spinal stenosis based on your clinical signs and symptoms.
Yeah.
So, well, and an x-ray.
Okay. So, you know, my best guess is that your road bike is more upright. And so whenever you hit a bump or just the vibration of the load is really coming from your tailbone, really straight up your spine. Whereas your exercise bike, you're a little bit forward flexed, which your back likes if you have stenosis. Plus, you have a little bit of rotation and mobility, and you don't have the vibration. So I would say, first thing is, I would probably look at reconfiguring my bike. There's a sweet little bike shop in Mount Horeb next to the Grumpy Troll. Could probably help you out with that. So I'd probably start with the kind of bike.
And then, Vicki, what exercises are you doing for stretching your lower legs?
Okay, I do. There's the Superman.
Okay.
I think my therapist called it, only it's kind of modified, where I put out, you know, my right arm and my left leg, and I hold it for about 10 seconds, and then I reverse. I also am on my back. I think he called that one the dead bug, where I lift, you know, the opposite leg and the arm and hold that, and I contract my pelvic muscles so that I feel very hard, you know, instead of soft. Mm-hmm. And I do that one. I do standing up on my toes. I do it's a sort of a modified squat where it's like I'm sitting in a chair, but I hold that for about 10 seconds. Trying to think what the other ones are.
But none of that was stretching. Do you have any stretching exercises?
Well,
okay.
Really. I mean, those were the exercises I was given, and I guess that's what I do.
Because when you say your when you say your symptoms come on with walking, how your ankle and your hip move relative to your back really impacts things. So if your hip is tight in the front of it, that can cause more stress to go up to your low back. And the same thing if you can't bend your shin over your foot. That also can cause a lot more stress in your back. And those would be things to be stretching on a daily basis because those decrease the stresses that go up to your spine.
Yeah, so the bottom line is you should probably go back and get your exercise program retooled at this point, and then maybe think about reconfiguring a bike that puts you in a little bit more forward lean.
There you go. Maybe a new bike in your future.
Yeah.
And there'd be nothing wrong with that, Vicki. A good excuse to get a new one, maybe. Thank you very much for that call, and good luck. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Steve in Lake Mills, we'll go to you next. Hi, Steve.
Hello. I have a relative who's getting a total joint, a total knee done. Do you have any suggestions that I can give her about how to prepare a house at home for rehab, recovery, and things she should do prior to having a total knee done?
When is she having it done, by the way?
In about a month.
All right.
So is she going to be going directly back home? Is she elderly, or does she have support at home?
She's in her 60s, and her husband will be home, but
okay.
He's not real handy.
I would have her prepare many meals and put them in the freezer. Oh, that's a great question. So it's different if you have support at home and you're going back home after your joint replacement. If you don't have support at home, it's often really beneficial to go into a skilled nursing facility for a couple weeks where you can get really intensive therapy. So if there are what we call comorbidities, if there are other medical issues, if you have, for example, diabetes or things like that, or you're having a lot of pain, sometimes it's really useful to go into one of those skilled nursing facilities so you can have very intensive therapy right afterwards. Just like John, our previous caller, who said, you know, you got to stick with your therapy. If you're going home and you have support at home, then checking the number of stairs you have to get into your house. You know, do you have a lot of stairs? Once you get into your house, how many stairs do you have to navigate to get to your bedroom or to the kitchen or to the bathroom? And making sure whatever assistive device you have, you can use on those stairs. If your stairs are narrow or if they're slippery at all, being aware of that, you may want to practice with an assistive device on your stairs before your surgery rather than post-op when you're medicated and in a lot of pain and you can't really move your knee. So that's another thing. Looking to see about rugs. Do you have rugs that are going to trip you up? Are your doorways wide enough to navigate with a walker? So all those things are really important things to do. And then seeing a physical therapist ahead of time to be instructed in the exercises that you're going to do post-op because, A, it's easier to remember, and B, you can practice performing them so that after surgery you remember how they're done and it's not the first time you've done them.
Yeah. And maybe that gives you a little strengthening. She's got a whole month.
Exactly. And I always tell people that the one of the most important things when you're going in for these elective-type surgeries, you know, you don't want to go out and be super vigorous and run around and say, I'm getting my joint replaced next week. I'm going to go, you know, walk 10 miles. And they go into surgery with this big, swollen, inflamed joint. It's the last thing you want before surgery because it creates this inflammation that create scar tissue post-op. So I say you really want your joint as calm as it can be, almost to the point where you ask yourself, gee, why am I having surgery now? Mm. That's the kind of shape you want it in before you go into surgery.
All good advice there, Steve. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Clay in Crandon your turn.
How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind, Clay?
I just want, it's probably indirect, but I just wanted to let you know something. I had a knee, total knee replacement done about 4 years ago. And my surgeon, and I'm not, this is not a commercial, but my surgeon has got a technique where he goes through the side, does not cut any tendons or muscles down the middle of your knee. He goes through the side, opens the area up, puts the total knee replacement in, and closes it down. My surgery was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. At 10:30 that morning, I walked out of the hospital. I had to stay there overnight because of Medicare. At 10:30, I walked out. I was walking a mile a day for 5 days, never took one pain pill. I was up to 2 miles a day for the next 5 days and 4 miles a day ever since then. I never took a pain pill, never had a problem. The guy is booked out 6 months in advance. He does 10 surgeries a day, 4 days a week. You know, he said, I can give you physical therapy if you want it, but he said, if you follow what I'm asking you to do, you won't need it.
Well, Clay, we're really happy that you had such a good outcome after your surgery. That's not what we hear most times from people. So good for you, and good for you getting out and exercising and keeping yourself moving all the time. That's going to be really important post-op.
Is that a type of surgery that you're aware of?
No, I'm not familiar with a lateral approach to that, unless it was a hemi, where it was a half knee replacement instead of a full knee replacement. It's potentially could do a lateral approach.
Oh, all right. There we go. Thank you, Clay. Appreciate it. Kristen in Lake Mills, your turn. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. I wanted to, first of all, thank you for talking about pelvic floor dysfunction today. It's something that I've been dealing with I've been having pain for probably 5 years. Was finally diagnosed with pelvic floor dysfunction last fall and interstitial cystitis a couple months ago. So, that isn't something that I've heard you talk about so far today. And my issues with the pelvic floor dysfunction are the tightness, not the incontinence. And it's excruciatingly painful. It's really difficult to walk. It makes activities of daily living can be really challenging. I've been doing physical therapy. I have a wonderful physical therapist. And been using muscle relaxants, suppository, which helps somewhat, started warm water pool therapy, trying to do as much as I can to try and get myself better, and wanted to know if you had any comments or suggestions for this particular type of pelvic floor issue.
Well, Kristen, I'm sorry that you're struggling with these symptoms, but it sounds like you're in good care with the physical therapist you're working with. And the interstitial cystitis, for the other listeners who may not know what that is, it's actually an inflammation of the bladder. So you need to have the medical professionals you're working with on board to make sure you have those medications. When the bladder gets irritated and not happy, it can cause muscles in the area to tighten up, which I suspect is part of what's going on with the pelvic floor muscles. And oftentimes with my patients that have this presentation, I'll go ahead and give them deep breathing exercises, mobilize their rib cage area, because interstitial cystitis usually puts us in the fight or flight mode instead of relaxation. So that is all housed in the rib cage area. So if we're breathing deeply, that can be helpful as well as mobilizing the rib cage area. But it sounds like you have some of the other strategies on board with your physical therapist in terms of relaxation.
What's the mobilizing of the rib cage area? What does that mean?
So the ribs attach to the backbones that are in that area, and we can press on the bones in a certain way to get them moving better, because when we go into fight or flight, everything stiffens up. So it's a joint mobilization, and we're just trying to get things to move and go. So if you have stiffness there, the nerves and the nervous system aren't getting adequate circulation. So we're trying to make an environment where they're getting circulation and blood flow so that those signals can go out to everything else and say, chill.
Okay. So that's something you get from the physical therapist. You don't do it yourself.
There are sometimes exercises that we can teach people to do to follow up on things. But because the ribs can be an area that can be easily overtreated, we would want to supervise that in particular.
Yeah, so it's not unusual that a physical therapist will do some manual techniques, whether it's mobilization or soft tissue work, and then the patient is given home exercises to maintain whatever gains were made in their one-on-one session.
All right. Kristen, does that help?
Yeah, and I have been doing stretching exercises at home that my physical therapist gave me. And I did the pain management and coping program through UW Health, which I highly recommend to anybody if you've got pain. And they cover deep breathing and progressive muscle relaxation. So is that related to what you're talking about with the rib cage, or is that something that I should specifically discuss with my physical therapist?
I would say that that's slightly different. The progressive relaxation looks at all muscles and getting them to tense up so that you can realize what the relaxation feels like after the fact, whereas the ribs and the spine mobilizations would be more in the realm of a physical therapist versus our excellent health psychologists at UW who you've been working with.
There you go. Thank you, Kristen. Good luck. Barbara in Delafield, thank you for calling.
Hi, this is Barbara.
What can we do for you, Barbara?
I have been diagnosed with severe stenosis of both the cervical and the lumbar spine. I do have a lot of pain. I do have a very good physical therapist who I think is the only reason I'm still moving at all. Sometimes my head, I have trouble holding my head up a lot of times, and I just want to lay down, and I do get very exhausted. My legs feel heavy. I do three exercises pretty regularly. One is called flossing. The other one is where it's bridging, I think it's called bridging, where you tighten mm-hmm. your abdomen yeah. real much. And then the third one I do with a door. I don't know what that's called. I use put on one leg of the door, and then my shoulder on the other side and kind of push against it. And that gets, I think, the iliopsoas to do something or that area. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what's your question, Barbara?
I think she needs some help with relieving some of the pain.
Is the physical therapist helping you with pain relief? Some of the things
that you're doing?
I
do take gabapentin. I'm supposed to take it three times a day. I can't because it makes me so tired. So I take it at night.
Are you able to access a pool, Barbara?
I have not. I am in near Oconomowoc where the Y is, but for some reason the Oconomowoc Y in all of southeastern Wisconsin does not take silver sneakers.
Huh. And there's no other facility in the area that takes silver sneakers around Delafield?
I have to check out. Somebody told me recently that maybe Shorehaven does, but they only have two times a week where you can go. Mm-hmm.
What about your physical therapist? Does your physical therapy clinic have access to a pool? Okay.
Fortunately not. Okay. They did.
Yeah. Because that would be a great place for you to exercise. So given that this is something that you're going to be living with for some time, investigating a place where you can get in and unweight your spine, both in your low back and in your neck, would be really useful. There are various aquatic devices that you can use to produce traction both in your cervical spine or in your lumbar spine. So I would continue to work with your physical therapist to see if there are other positions he or she can teach you for pain relief, and maybe they can help you track down a pool.
Good luck, Barbara. Thank you so much for calling. And Lori and Carrie, thank you both so much. I hope you have a chance to do this again at some point. Appreciate it very much.
You bet.
Thanks for having us.
Lori Tynbrosi Brody is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Carrie Schwer is manager of UW Health Spine Orthopedics Team and directs the UW Meritor Orthopedic Residency. Great to have them with us. And We'll try and do this again. There were a lot of great questions there. Jill and Lori will be back on July 15th. And tomorrow we talk with the authors of a couple of new mysteries that are out there. In the meantime, thank you so much and stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.